This is a good day, Limits. A very good day. At approximately 9:12 a.m., I got the text on a group text with many family members. She's here. Everyone looking great so far. We'll send pictures shortly. I am a grandfather.
Woo!
Grandpa Joe.
Grandpa Joe. Congratulations, Joe.
That's awesome. Thank you, sir. I can't believe this. I can't believe it. How did this happen? I feel like inside, still almost like a teenager or something. I don't feel like I look like a grandfather, although looks can be deceiving, and we often don't perceive ourselves the way others perceive us, physically, the way that we look. It's just very strange, but it's a glorious day as well. I mean, I'm astounded. I'm astounded by the cycles of life. I'll tell you that much. The next question is, what am I called as a grandfather? What's my name, my nickname, my grandfather name? Am I Gramps? Am I Grandpa? Am I Pa? Pop? We called our grandfather Pop. More to the point, do I get to choose that, or are you bestowed your grandfather name? How does that work?
No, I mean, I think you can choose it in conjunction with the parents.
I don't think you can choose it.
No?
What are you going to do? Tell a one-year-old? When do kids start talking again? Two? Three? You're not going to tell the kid, excuse me, I'd like to be called, please call me Grandpa Joe, or please call me Pop. They choose.
And I'm not going to say I can speak from this from experience, thankfully, but I think the parents say to the children, like, we're going to Papa's house, or we're going
good point.
To
yeah.
Pa's house. Pa's and that's house, how it yeah. just kind of starts to sink in.
Pa? I don't know that I want to be a Pa.
I don't know.
I want something more than Pa.
Hard for a 23-year-old to comprehend, to be completely honest.
Well, what do you call your grandparents?
So, Papa is my mom's dad, and Pap is my dad's dad.
Papa and Pap. I think those are common.
Yeah, very common.
Ours both were Pop. Pop.
Yeah, both.
Pop Starkey and Pop Cotter.
Easy to be confused.
And Mom? Was it Mom? Yeah, and Mimi. Mimi, yeah.
What about Mimi?
Mimi's a good one.
Yeah. Very good one.
For my wife, obviously. I guess if I could request it, it would be Pop in the grand tradition of our family. I don't feel like a Pop, though. How am I a grandfather? I think of my grandfathers, and they were both old. I guess I'm old.
You're not old.
Are you going to help me at any point dig out of this limit?
I don't know how you want me to dig.
You're burying yourself more and more. I'm not staring at you. I'm wondering how this all works. I don't know how it works.
I'm basking in the glory of your new grandchild.
How about Grandpa Joe?
Grandpa Joe could work.
I mean, that's a little long. You don't expect a kid to say, how about Papa Joe?
Papa Joe would be good.
How about Papa?
You could be Papa.
I'll be a Papa. I'd like that.
You could be Pap? What about Pap Joe? Nah, I like Papa Joe.
Yeah, I like Papa Joe better. I'm not going to get over this anytime soon in a good way. But it's also, I'm a grandfather?
Let it sink in.
Holy horse milk.
You're going to love it.
Thank you.
You're really going to enjoy it with your family.
All right. So there's that. And then there's Steelers Ravens. And there's also Ann calling me an idiot. And there's also a party I was at last night. A company party with all of our wonderful sponsors, including JP from JP Roofing and Siding, including the General, who I believe had nice things to say about you. Actually, he didn't. I just made that up. But he didn't have bad things to say about you either.
He didn't have anything to say about me.
He didn't. But he wasn't prompted either. Jeff Patton from the Baseball Card Castle in Cranberry. And Limits, I heard through the grapevine at this little shindig that you have made it a goal to be invited there next year. Is that right? Did I hear that correctly?
Well, I mean, it's always nice to be invited. I mean, I didn't take no offense to not being invited to this.
Like, well, none of them.
I'm very young and still trying to grow.
You're 23.
But I feel like it would be like a good thing to go to.
It's very ambitious. And in order to get invited, you might have to unseat somebody. Would that be me?
No, I don't think that you have to unseat anybody.
I don't know about that. I'm starting to suspect you of things. You're going to sabotage me over the next year, try to take my job and show up at that party.
You idiot.
That was Ann from yesterday.
Come on, Joe. Really? Conspiracy theories? Yeah, after your grandchild was just born, you're going to try with conspiracy theories?
Yeah, something's happening here. I don't know. I was told by a couple of people that Limit says that his big goal for the next year is to get invited to this party. It actually became the talk of the party at one point.
No, it did not.
It did. I was with a group of people in a corner. It got brought up by a certain individual and then became a topic of conversation. The limitless ambition of one Austin Bechtold.
Well, I had a good night of playing basketball last night, I'll tell you that.
Did you?
Yeah, we had a really good game that we had against the...
So you want to switch topics here. Okay. There's a lot of people on notice right now. That's all I can say. A lot of people on notice.
Apparently in a bad way, you're trying to throw me into the weeds.
Into the weeds. No, a lot of people had nice things to say about you, but that did become a topic. Like, what's he going to do to get invited next year?
Literally nothing. If I'm wanted, I will go. If not, that's the question.
That's the question. You know what else became a topic? I met a guy named Matt who at 26 years old became the voice of the Harlem Globetrotters in arenas. Can you believe that?
Yes, I know Matt.
You know Matt?
What is Matt's last name?
I don't know.
Does Matt have a beard?
Yes.
Does Matt have glasses?
Yeah, I think we're on the same guy now.
I know Matt.
I don't need to go through the whole thing.
Yes, I know Matt.
I think a Matt who called Globetrotters games, we probably had it figured out then.
Yes.
This guy is unbelievable. You sound jealous already.
He was there?
Yes.
No, I've known Matt for a while. I like Matt.
Right, he got invited.
You're just starting to create a stir. That's all you're doing. And I had a feeling that you were going to try to do this.
Do what? All I'm saying is what some of the things that happened at the party. I had no idea that you knew Matt.
Yeah,
I was just going to tell a story that at 26 years old, this guy, there was an advertisement to call Globetrotters games, and he filled out a application online. And then he got to be one of 10 finalists, and he was like, yeah, that'll be cool. I got to apply for the Globetrotters game. Next thing you know, I think he went to Israel for his first game.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Then he was in Europe. He toured Europe with the Globetrotters. I mean, this is an unbelievable story. There would be 16,000 people in, like, you know, Madrid and places like that watching the Globetrotters, and he would be the in-house announcer, and they would have a translator next to him taking his words and translating it to the crowd.
Congratulations on all his success.
See, now you're jealous, and it's coming out. I just wanted to tell a story. Do you like Matt?
I do, yes.
What do you like about him?
He's a good broadcaster. I've known him for a while. I think he's a good guy.
He is a good
guy. Does a good job.
Wants to play golf at Moon, and I intend to play.
Yes, he is a Moon guy.
Yeah.
A Moon grad.
He is. But that's unbelievable at age 26 to land that job. And then I guess he moved on after like 4 years. Now he works for PPG Paints Arena and also calls games. Have you called games together?
Not together, no, because we are both play-by-play guys. Mm. But we've called games like back-to-back and stuff like that.
Yeah, I'm definitely sensing maybe either jealousy or rivalry here, so I'm going
to
move on.
There is no jealousy and no rivalry,
yes,
and you love to make something out of nothing.
Just the way that you bit off those words has me thinking.
Here we go.
It does. There's
maybe my problem's with you.
Or maybe you think of me what Ann thought of me yesterday, right? I'm still not over that. That was very insulting.
You idiot.
I love that. We got to play that one.
Take the rain in the snow. Oh my, what will we do?
Who was that?
That was caller Eric on the weather.
Oh, that's right, on the dome. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can't take the rain in the snow. Oh my, what will we do?
He was legendary. All right, Limits, I'm going to let all this go. I'm very proud of you as well. I almost feel like your grandfather. I just want good things for you.
You feel like my papa.
I do. And you did become a topic on a number of different occasions last night.
Oh, boy.
Kibitzing at the party. All good stuff. People like you. Neil Walker's friend, McCabe, the former quarterback from Pine Richland. Was it Kevin?
Yeah.
Yes?
Kevin McCabe.
He came up and said he loves the show.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Which means he loves you, I think.
I appreciate it. I think he loves you even more.
You're welcome. Neil Walker's a hell of a guy, isn't he?
Yeah, I like Neil a lot.
Just a very down-to-earth, normal guy.
He did a charity basketball game that IPA announced a month or so ago. It's really fun.
Tell you what else he is. is one of the greatest athletes that maybe, I mean, I'm not saying we don't talk about him. Of course we do. He played for the Pittsburgh Pirates, for God's sake. So whenever we talk about the Pirates, you know, rising from the ashes, he's a part of that story. What we don't talk about him as, or in the context of, is one of the greatest athletes to come out of Western Pennsylvania. You realize he was a really good wide receiver in football too, right?
Yeah, Pine Richland.
Yeah. Yes, Pine Richland. But not only that, he was major league ready. He could have played a number. He got drafted as a catcher, first of all. Then when I went and visited him in Indianapolis, him and McCutchen, he was a third baseman, ready to be called up. He was major league ready at third, okay? But they drafted Pedro. So he moves to second, like, you know, on the spur of the moment. Oh, okay, I'll just be a second baseman at the major league level. That's unbelievable what he did.
He's a better athlete than I think people give him a lot of credit for. You know, just his ability to do a lot of different things around the diamond.
Did he play basketball?
I believe he did, yeah.
Are you sure?
Pretty sure. I'm pretty sure he did. I think we've talked about that before.
Who has?
I think I asked him about basketball once or twice.
Oh, you talked about it with him?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure.
I'd like to know the answer to that. And the answer to this, and this is where we begin today, Limits, is the Steeler defense. I want to talk to you out there about this defense. 9 games into the season, and excuse me, 9 games into the season. What do we have here? Yesterday, I heard Pony refer to the Steelers as an elite defense. Elite? I don't agree at this point. Their scoring defense is second in the league. That's elite. The yardage that they give up is what, 8th or 9th? That's not so elite. It's good. I think they're a good defense. But I think the real story, well, A, is yet to be told, but B, after 3 games, I would have been on the Pony bandwagon. Do you have a good Pony clip we can use? Anything at all? I would have been right with Pony. In fact, I was. That this is, wow, this defense is something else.
All right, thank you so much, Austin.
This could be this could be the Steelers' best defense, I wrote and said, since 2010 under Mike Tomlin. That's what I thought, and it still could be. But in these past 6 games, the numbers have slipped. That's just a fact. In the last 6 games, the Steelers are giving up 20 points a game and almost 340 yards a game. They've been gouged at home in the run game by two unknowns whose names I frankly forget. That's how unknown they are. By the Cowboys and the Giants. Those aren't great numbers. Like 340 yards a game over the last 6 games. That would be 19th in the NFL right now over the full season. Giving up 20 points a game is okay, but it barely cracks the top 10 over the full season. So the numbers have slipped a little bit. Not a big deal. And this is not an insult, by the way. It's a wondering. It's a questioning that I'd love to talk about with you at 412-928-9370. They're coming off a good performance against the Commanders, and that was a very explosive offense, is a very explosive offense, with a really good young quarterback. However, I think you have to factor into the equation here that Washington helped them in a big way. I saw, I think it was in the Washington Post or maybe one of the fan sites that covers the Commanders, that there were 5 drops in the game. One that comes to mind is Zach Ertz beating Deshaun Elliott and a perfect pass that might have gone a long ways. And another was Luke McCaffrey running wide open past the Steelers' secondary late in the game. I think about 6 minutes left, Cam Sutton trailing him. Man, when that ball's in the air, and when I looked at a replay, I'm thinking that might have been a 97-yard touchdown. I think that was from their 3-yard line. Was it not, Limits?
Yes.
I think it was. And it was a terrible throw. So, okay, that happens, and it was a good performance by the defense. I thought especially keeping Jaden Daniels, in check on the ground, right? because he had had some big numbers on the ground. And what did he have, 3 carries for 5 yards?
Yeah, 5 total yards.
I guess I was thinking Josh McDaniels. But either way, I thought they got some help in that game. I'm wondering how good this defense really is. And the fact of the matter now is that, you know, broken Aaron Rodgers and ancient Joe Flacco and a man named Aiden O'Connell and the corpse of Daniel Jones, they're all in the rearview mirror. Now you're going to get, you've passed the first test. I will give them that. I wouldn't give them an A-plus or anything, but they passed the first test against Daniels. Now they're going to get double doses of Lamar, Joe Burrow. They're going to get a red-hot Jalen Hurts. They're going to get Patrick Mahomes. They're going to get really good passing games. And I'm curious, how good are they? Like, is this going to be a great Steeler defense? Is it going to be good? Is it going to be exposed here? Let me give you some numbers about the Ravens offense coming up, Limits, after you give your opinion. What do you think about this?
You know, I think that defensively, I worry about the secondary more than anything. Alex Highsmith being out in this game, especially the component that he brings run defensively, I'm worried about. Now, Preston Smith, I think, covers up some of those gaps, but I've always been hesitant at Dante Jackson. He had a couple good first games, but last game I don't think was very good. In the last couple of games, I don't think he's been very good. He was hurt in the last game. Joey Porter Jr. had arguably his worst game of his Steelers career, definitely of the season, last week. And there's the always tried and true discussion, is Minka doing enough? So I'm not that concerned about the Steelers' defense. There is some concern there, and it especially runs in the back end.
Yeah, I mean, at home, again, see, and I remember having this conversation early in the season when I was praising them to the high heavens, was the great Steelers' defenses, and we all know what they look like. We know a great Steeler defense when we see one. We've given them nicknames, right, over the decades. Great defenses smash the run at home. At home, especially, whether it's 1976, 2006, or now. And they haven't done that.
Not against the Giants.
Well, no, they've given up over 300 yards rushing in their last 3 home games. And not against the Giants and not against the Cowboys. And I forgot that guy's name, too, who ran for a career best, I think, 87
Dowdle.
Yards that day. Yeah, Dowdle. I don't know what his name was. There's some cracks in the armor. That's what I'm saying. They were lights out for 3 games. I think they've shown some cracks. I think 6 games in which you give up 340 yards and 20 points a game might speak to, yeah, they're playing well enough to win, but look at the competition for the most part. Look at that. Look at what those numbers would be over the whole season, and it gives me pause as we go into what I think is now the toughest part of, well, what everybody thinks is now the toughest part of the schedule, quarterbacks, offenses, etc. And I do think they got some help against Jaden Daniels. I really do. I mean, it wasn't like one drop. It was a handful of them. And plus, that play to McCaffrey, that was a secondary malfunction there. Here's the numbers with the Ravens offense and why it's a great matchup. And for the Steelers, the schedule stiffening, better offenses, better quarterbacks is good news too, because it provides a canvas on which you can prove true greatness. Man, you start locking down people here in the second half of the year, and they might not need to do that, by the way. That's a whole different topic. They might only need to be a good defense. You know, you give up, 23 to the Ravens, you should be able to win that game still. But I think the question is out there, and obviously the aspiration is out there to be a great defense, and it looked that way early. Listen to this, Limits. A guy from ESPN broke down the Ravens this way. I did not know this. The Ravens average 7.1 yards per play. That's on pace to be the highest mark in the history of the NFL. Did you know that?
Knew they were good. Didn't know they were that good.
Think about that. Okay, 7.1 yards per play on pace to be the highest mark in NFL history. They're quarterbacked by Lamar Jackson, whose passer rating of 123.2 is on pace to be the highest mark of any quarterback in NFL history. Did you know that?
No.
Neither did I. And it's 15 points higher than the next guy, and then you go from like 2 to 15, and there's not even 15 points between them. That I also mentioned he's on pace to run for nearly 1,000 yards. So ESPN goes on here. They have the most efficient passer in NFL history right now, who also averages 54 yards per game rushing at 5.9 yards a carry. And a running back, Derrick Henry, who's on pace to become the fifth player ever to average 100 yards per game running on 6 yards per carry. So he concludes this way, because we can get, you know, bogged down in numbers. He concludes this way. They have a historically great quarterback, a historically great running back, and when you combine the proficiency of their pass game and their run game, what it spits out is one of the great offenses in NFL history. That's what the numbers say right now. And they also have a proving ground right now, which is the rest of this season, starting out against what some people, Andrew Filippone notably, call an elite defense. Elite. I think it's a great matchup. I really do. This is the best Ravens offense maybe the Steelers have ever faced, right?
Yeah, I'd say that's the case. I mean, statistically it is. But it's also an offense that lost to Cleveland and the Raiders and posted 24 and 23 points. So it's not like they're invincible.
Right. And I guess that's my point with the Steelers defense too, is they look to be not invincible, but close to it. They look to be one of Tomlin's great defenses 3 games in, and they still have an opportunity to be that. But I'm concerned based on the numbers over the last 6 games, based on the level of competition in a lot of those games and what happened, and based on the competition from here on out. And, you know, I would include Daniels, though. That was the beginning of the radical upgrade, and they did. I would give them a B for that game, for sure. B+, maybe. What would you give them?
Yeah, they made timely plays. I give them a B.
I just felt like they got an awful lot of help. I want to hear from people on this topic. How good, or maybe not good, that we're going to find out, is this Steeler defense at 412-928-9370. Off the top, presented by JP Roofing and Siding. We got Chris Hoken for the whole hour at 11 o'clock. Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. The hotline presented by Sullivan Super Service, providing trusted plumbing and HVAC service for over 50 years. I know their record against Lamar, too. And that's a different and very much related topic for this year's defense. It's 1-3. It's a small sample size. And yet I give Mike Tomlin credit, because when you look at what Lamar has done against the rest of the league compared, or even the division, compared to what he's done against the Steelers, it's radically, radically different. Well, another team that's done this, though, is the Chiefs. I think he's 1-4 against them, but has actually had some, like earlier this season, I thought he was fabulous against them, and then they lost by a toe, if you remember that. Let's hear Rob Long yesterday, who covers the Ravens for The Fan in Baltimore, talking about how this is a different Lamar. This is a different challenge for the Steelers.
I'm seeing better than ever, more poised than ever. His ability to read defenses, his ability to get the offense out of jams pre-snap. Here's the difference. When Greg Roman was the offensive coordinator, they would break the huddle with under 10 seconds left in the play clock religiously. Now, with Todd Monken, he gets out of that huddle. There's 15 seconds plus sometimes on the play clock. He can go to the line of scrimmage. I almost felt like Greg Roman didn't trust him to make those decisions pre-snap. Todd Monken does, and more often than not, Lamar gets them out of sticky situations while his pre-snap reads.
That's really interesting to me, is that maybe part of that just comes with being in the league now, as long as Lamar has been, but Todd Monken is unlocking the field general side of Lamar. You know what I mean? Limits? And that, to me, creates an entirely different challenge than maybe the Lamar that the Steelers have seen from other parts of his career.
Because we've given Lamar a lot of flack for not being a good pocket passer. And, I mean, you have to be honest, he's improved there. Like, he's gotten significantly better, where he's not always thinking about taking off and running every single time that he escapes and scrambles out of the pocket, still looking downfield. And I think that Todd Monken has partly unlocked that and molded that in him.
And he still, or now, has this monster next to him in Derrick Henry. So to me, it's an entirely different ball game. And you also have to remember, by the way, that one of Lamar's decisions was 2019. He's 1-3. He didn't have a good game, although he had a pretty good fourth quarter. The Steelers won that game 26-23 here. Then he lost in 2020. He sits out a lot of games against the Steelers because some of them have come late where the Ravens have things clinched, and he lost that game too, 28-24. He still had a pretty good game. Two touchdown passes, and he ran for 65 yards. I don't know. The numbers in one way are stark, no pun intended, but some of this happened a long time ago, Limits. You know what I mean?
You ready for the Lamar Jackson numbers against the Steelers in the four games?
Yeah.
7 interceptions, 5 fumbles, a 59% completion rate, a 66.8 passer rating, sacked 20 times, 4 total touchdowns. He's 1-3.
Yes. My point being, and I'm reading off some of these games, is that a lot of these occurred sort of a long time ago in football years.
I feel really good about this game.
Do you?
Very good.
You feel good about the Steeler defense stifling him, or what are we going to see?
I feel like they're going to slow him down. I think Baltimore has better weapons than in those four games. Zay Flowers has really emerged. They have 2 tight ends. I don't think Bateman's that good, but maybe wrong way Deontay will make a couple plays. And with Derrick Henry back there,
if you're
he's the
depending
best back
on wrong way Deontay in this game, then I would say you're really reaching.
He's going to make a play. He is going to make a play on a big third down, whether it be the third or the fourth quarter, to keep a drive alive.
This hurts. My friend Mark texted me, gold tees for you now, Grandpa. That really hurts.
There you go, Gramps.
Off the Gramp tees.
You'll be having to go to bed another hour early today.
That's right. I don't know, Limits. I have questions about the Steelers' defense moving forward. I do. I do not, absolutely do not agree with Filippone that it is an elite defense. However, I'm more than willing to change my mind, and I think all the answers are going to be provided over these next 8 games, starting Sunday against a team that is averaging more yards per play than any team there's ever been through 10 games. Than any team there's ever been. That's a pretty good challenge. Going to get to your calls in a couple minutes here and continue our discussion of the Steeler defense. How good is it, actually? How good is it? They're going against a historically good offense this Sunday. And maybe the other question with that, Limits, is what would constitute a good performance for the Steelers defense? Somebody could say a winning performance. You know, if you give up 38 and you win 39-38, maybe if you make late turnovers, things like that. But what in your mind would constitute a good performance? What do you think in point-wise, yard-wise? How would you define it? I say low 20s, which is a tall task against the Ravens. But I think if you keep them in the low 20s, that's a winning performance with a splash play or two.
Against this good of an offense, about 24 points, a turnover, and a key stop in the fourth quarter to preserve a win.
There was one of those a long time ago. Well, not that long ago. The T.J. Watt bearing down on Lamar Jackson when Harbaugh went for 2 to win it. That was good stuff. Jonas Schaefer, in the meantime, from the Baltimore Banner, is here to talk about the Ravens. Jonas, thanks for joining me. How are you today?
I'm doing well, Joe. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, man. We talked yesterday a lot about Lamar Jackson and how he's getting maybe more freedom to change calls and things like that at the line of scrimmage, has more time to do that. Seems like they're trusting him more. Is that accurate?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the offense is within his control in a way that it hasn't been. I appreciate that you mentioned the time that he's being given, because under Greg Roman, you know, in the first, you know, when Lamar won his first MVP, it felt like in every other play occurrence where the play clock was getting under 5 seconds and, you know, they were kind of rushing to the line of scrimmage. They were getting the snap off. And I think that kind of hurt him when it came to deciphering what was happening before the snap. You know, you could disguise your blitzes a little bit better. You could, you know, hide some cards that maybe you would play after the snap. And right now they get into the line of scrimmage with like 15 seconds left. He's, you know, seeing if it's one high or two high. He's seen, you know, where the mic lined up. He's seen who might be blitzing. And he's been really, really good against the blitz. He's been really, really good against pretty much every kind of coverage. And I think a lot of that is certainly having better help around him with Derrick Henry and then the upgraded receiving core. But it's also just the development that you see from a quarterback who has, at this point, kind of seen everything. You know, he's seen every coverage. He's seen every blitz. And he has a much better understanding now of how to beat those blitzes and those pressures and those coverages than he did 2 or 3 years ago. And that's why he is, you know, the prohibitive MVP favorite right now.
One other thing he's seen is Diontae Johnson falling flat on his face on what should have been a wide open play. What is happening so far with Diontae, and will he get an increased role on Sunday?
Yeah, he's in a tough spot right now because obviously the Ravens are a great passing team. They're also a great running team. And I don't really know if Diontae at this point is like a top two wide receiver in either of those facets. You know, at wide receiver, they have Zay Flowers and Rashad Bateman, who are great at getting open against man coverage. When the Ravens want to, you know, not really hide their cards too well and say, you know, we're going to put our best blocking wide receivers on the field because we're going to throw a pitch out to Derrick Henry, or we're going to have Lamar run the option, then that's usually going to be, you know, Nelson Aguilar or Tylan Wallace. And, you know, Diontae is not that big, and he doesn't have that chemistry yet with Lamar. So I think there is still this coming along process where he just hasn't been on the field that often because either he's not fully comfortable yet with Lamar or fully comfortable yet with the offense or where his route depths need to be. And that definitely cut into his production. I mean, he didn't look all that happy after the win over Cincinnati on Thursday. And that was with him, you know, just going supernova at the end to win that game. I think that was obviously partly because he expected a bigger role and wants a bigger role, considering that he is going to be a free agent after this year. So it's going to be interesting to see what might happen on Sunday with Diontae if things really spiral and he's not getting the ball, because I'm sure you guys know that not great smoke signals for Diontae as he was leaving Pittsburgh and just kind of what he meant to that organization.
Jonas, I was looking at Justin Tucker. He's an interesting story because he's been such a weapon through his whole career, and I see he still makes all of the short field goals, and even from 40 to 49, he's something like, I don't know, 15 for 17 the last 2 years, so he's missed a couple. But it's the 50-plus where he suddenly seems to have lost his touch. What's happening with him?
And not just the 50-plus. I mean, he missed an extra point on Thursday. It seemed like it was going to loom pretty large because you just didn't know if you could count on the Ravens to actually outscore the Bengals. But it's been a weird thing to decipher. It's not, you know, obviously – kicker play is not as heavily scrutinized as quarterback play. There's not really a Dan Orlovsky for what kickers might be going wrong there. What's interesting is that I think every single miss he's had this year, he's hooked it to the left. So it's always missing wide of the left upright. That was even the case for the extra point. You know, there's some internet, you know, YouTube video breakdowns about how maybe that the hold is partly to blame. You know, the Ravens kind of refreshed their kicking team battery a couple of years ago when they lost their, you know, Pro Bowl long snapper, the Titans, and their punter, who was their holder, Sam Cook, retired, and they, you know, replaced him with Jordan Stout. Obviously, there's not a whole lot of clarity on just how slight changes here or there might affect these guys, but at a certain point, you know, the responsibility comes down to the kicker because the ball is going to be there, the laces are going to be out, and you just got to boot that thing through the uprights, and the Ravens just haven't done a good job with that. And you know, their special teams, which for year after year have been consistently excellent, are like bottom third in the league right now. And I think that could potentially be a difference considering how good the Steelers are this year.
Jonas Schaefer of the Baltimore Banner. Last question, Jonas, is the defense. I guess this is a big question, but if you had to identify the main problem with this defense, what is it and is it fixable?
they just are out of sorts in the secondary. I don't think there really is a silver bullet. I think it's somewhat fixable. I mean, you know, Brandon Stevens last year was a good cornerback. Marcus Williams last year, while playing with a torn pec, was a good safety. And now both those guys rank among the worst rated, you know, players at a position in the NFL, according to PFF. So I think this is probably a situation where they would prefer to have their bye sooner than week 13 or week 14, whenever it is, just so they can get a, you know, better handle on what actually is happening, how they can teach these things. But they need to bow up. They are probably the worst defense in the NFL against number one wide receivers. And here comes George Pickens, who, you know, this, you can probably count on one hand the number of wide receivers in the NFL who are playing better than him. So they need to get their head turned around. They need to figure out, you know, why they're messing up these, you know, handoffs and zone coverage. They need to tackle better. There's plenty of talent there. You know, Nate Wiggins, first rounder, Marlon Humphrey, first rounder, Brandon Stevens, third rounder, Marcus Williams, extremely well paid, Kyle Hamilton, first rounder. They just haven't put it all together. And it's been a pretty shocking drop off considering just how buttoned up they were last year.
Will Humphrey follow Pickens around, do you think?
No, they really don't do that. They usually set they usually set Brandon Stevens on the left side. You know, if you're the quarterback, he's going to be on the left side. Mm. Marlon Humphrey on the right side. So unless they're in man coverage, which, you know, they do about, I don't know, like 30 to 35% of the time, then you can usually count on where those guys are going to line up for the snap.
Jonas, we appreciate the time, man. That was good info on the Ravens. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, sir. Appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. Jonas Schaefer from the Baltimore Banner. And he used to write for the Baltimore Sun as well. Does a really good job with them. Justin Tucker has been a curiosity, hasn't he, Limits?
It's weird. Like, it is odd that he's so automatic for so long in his career, and now he misses an extra point in that critical game.
I know. And then from beyond 50, he's 3 for his last 10. You didn't even think about that. Like, 55, he was golden.
He was automatic. I mean, even 60. Remember he booted that, 64-yarder
yes.
to win the game against, I don't remember who it was against, a couple years ago?
50-minute mark on The Fan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Jeep Dodge, Route 19, Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. Listen to this show every Wednesday to hear about Starkey's Card of the Week from the Baseball Card Castle in Cranberry. Contests run every Wednesday through Friday at noon at the 937thefan.com contesting page. Let's hit the lines for a couple minutes here before we welcome Chris Hoke for the 11 o'clock hour. We were talking about the Steeler defense. And it's been a really interesting case so far. Are they great? Are they good? Are they about to be exposed? What's happening here? Who do we got?
Let's start with our buddy, Steven.
Hey, Steven.
What's up, guys? Steven Fabian here, Plum Native, Inside Edition correspondent.
Yes!
How's it going?
Good, Steven. What's going on?
Loyal listener of the show, as you guys know, I have to say, number one, I enjoyed your argument yesterday with Limits there about the Pirates, but more importantly, I enjoyed your conversation about raisins and what happened to raisins.
Yeah, whatever happened to just Limits asked it, when's the last time you had a box of raisins? We both decided we were about 8. How about you?
Well, I have some insight here because I have 4 kids, okay? My 6-year-old, she doesn't eat raisins anymore, but she used to love raisins. My twins, who are about to be 3, they eat the raisins.
Mm.
And my baby, who's like 6 months, she doesn't eat anything other than milk right now. So I'm thinking the cutoff could be between, based on my research here, the cutoff for raisins could be between the age 3 and the age 6.
Why, though? Why did your daughter stop?
I
can't figure it out. Why people just stop? Because they're so enjoyable up until that point.
And this girl used to love raisins so much, I got her a California Raisins shirt for Christmas one year because she liked raisins so much. Now she doesn't touch raisins. I don't know what it is.
It's one of life's great mysteries, Stephen.
Yeah, but I want to ask you guys a question regarding to the Steelers defense here. Interesting factoid. I've got an inside source. My neighbor across the lake on Lake Mohawk in New Jersey is a former Raven. He played for the Ravens for 8 seasons, and he just retired 2 years ago. Nick Boyle, you may remember, he was a backup tight end, a blocking tight end,
yes.
Played behind Mark Andrews, played with Lamar. Good guy. He's become a good friend. He's got 4 kids, too. His kids and my kids are in daycare together right now. He helped me move my washer, my new washer, up my stairs the other day. This guy, he's a fun guy, man. He's a fun guy. But I asked Nick, and what's cool about Nick is that he doesn't mind talking about football, and me as a diehard, lifelong Steeler fan, you know, I could ask him questions until I'm blue in the face. And what's cool is he's open to answering them. And I asked him, I said, look, you've played against the Steelers so many times. Who did you hate playing against the most on that Steelers defense? I think his answer will shock you, and his reasoning will shock
Let's
you.
Guess.
Who do you guys think? Who
yeah.
Do you, yeah, who do you think it is?
So Nick Boyle was there 15 through, or no, 18 through 22? Is that right? Something like that?
No, I think you were right, 15 through 22.
15 through 22.
Contracts.
Who did he hate the most? Limits? You got a guess on that one?
Ooh.
I'm going to say Minka. What's your guess?
I'm going to say TJ.
TJ.
Both incorrect. Would you like to guess again?
Cam?
Alex Highsmith?
Joe, you nailed it. It's Cam. But guess what? His reasoning. And this is crazy because we know Cam, of course, man of the year, you know, doing all the service in the community, wonderful human, hopefully will be a career Steeler. He said Cam talks more smack and is dirtier than any player he's ever played against.
Wow. How about them apples?
Shocking.
That's surprising.
Yeah. And, you know, I love to hear it because – to me, that's the leader of your defense, right?
I
and
love
Cam,
to hear it, too.
In my opinion, Cam is having a phenomenal year. I'm so glad to see that he's fully healthy now. But, you know, I mean, the guy's playing like he's 10 years younger. But I love that he's the leader of the defense, and he's talking the most smack and, you know, is dirty and whatever. I think it's great. I think it sets a good example. I'd like to see more of it. I'd like to see more of it from this team.
So
and,
would I.
And really, my opinion on the defense is, let's get real. We are deeper on defense than we've been in years. You know, it was only a couple seasons ago where we had guys like Taco Wallace running around out there and other people we signed off the street. We had a man named Taco on our defense.
I remember him well. Well, listen to this. You speak of the animosity building. You wish more Steelers would play dirty against the Ravens. My friend Limits here is filled with respect. He opened the week by saying how much Steeler fans respect the Ravens, and some have more respect than animosity toward the Ravens. He made it sound like they're going to sit around the campfire and roast marshmallows
Steven,
together.
Steven, I think you probably heard it. I think that there's some hatred there, but I think there's also a lot of respect when you consider the relationship and the rivalry between the Bengals and the Browns, where it seems like that respect is lacking compared to the Ravens, where it seems like more of an even fight every time, where Cincinnati and Cleveland, it always seems like there's just something extra there.
First of all, you guys are nuts if you think I wasn't listening to that conversation, because I listen to the show every morning. It's perfect for my morning commute. From 10 to 11, I'm listening to the show.
Let's go.
Just keep that in your back pocket. And you're welcome for the listenership, or whatever you'd call it, for the ratings. Ratings.
Thank you, Steven.
Yeah.
We're down to 15 seconds here. We have Chris Hoke in the building.
Okay, I agree with Limits, kind of. I respect the Ravens a little bit more than the Bengals. I just sort of think they're on a lesser tier than the Ravens Steelers.
Thank you, Steven. Great stuff.
That's my opinion. Thanks, guys.
See you, man.